welcome to a new episode of our Zano Animal podcast. Today I want to talk with you about a topic that really concerns probably every horse owner whose horse isn't just kept isolated in a backyard without any horse contact. Our topic today is hierarchy in the herd. And I think everyone knows these statements like, my horse is low ranking by nature, mine has no problems, he's boss in this group, the hierarchy needs to be established first. All these things, when we look at these statements closely, that's actually a pretty human way of looking at horse behavior. We as humans are used to thinking in hierarchies. For example, from our work life, you have a boss, maybe a sub-boss, middle management, and then you have all the minions doing the day-to-day jobs, and they simply have to do what the middle management or the management says. Horses, on the other hand, live in highly complex social structures, and I'm always amazed and sometimes even a bit shocked when you take a peek behind the curtain and see what really happens when horses can live out their social behavior like it's naturally. And when we then compare it with what we humans have made of it and ask ourselves whether it's really always in our horses' best interest. So let's start with wild horses. This is where it gets really interesting, because what we can observe, and there's a much more complex thing going on than the simple alpha, beta, omega hierarchy thing that's often described. In the wild, we mainly have two different types of groups. First, there are the family units. These are mare groups with their offspring and a stallion. And these groups are like small families. And it's not about dominance in the sense of who's the boss, but about task distribution. Every member has their role in this family, and the stallion is often the protector. An experienced mare leads the group to water and food simply because she knows where the best water and food sources are from experience. Others watch the foals. Those are usually the younger mares. They watch the foals and take care of them, relieving the mom a bit of the mom duty. And the whole structure, it's teamwork with task distribution, where everyone does the job they're best at, and it's not dictatorship. And then we have the bachelor groups in wild horses. These are pure stallion groups, mostly younger animals who haven't started their own families yet, but sometimes also older ones who either never had an interest in starting a family. You have the terminal bachelor guys in horses too, or the older stallions have given up their lead stallion job and joined a guy's apartment again. And when you look closely, these bachelor groups really are like guys living in a shared apartment. They are like best buddies. They play together. Sometimes they even play rough. They groom each other, explore the area together. And here too, there's no strict hierarchy in the sense of one rules over all the others, but rather a distribution of tasks where everyone does what they're good at. And what both groups and feral horses have in common, the horses choose each other. Nobody forces a mare to stay with a particular stallion. If she doesn't like him, she can leave him. Nobody forces two young stallions to hang out together. They decide that themselves based on whether the kind of chemistry between them is right, whether they feel safe and comfortable with each other. And here's something else important, besides the we choose each other. Resources in nature are usually always available. When all the grass is eaten down in one spot, the group simply moves on. When one water source gets too crowded, there's usually another one, and there's ample space to sleep and rest for everyone. So conflicts over food or water are the absolute exception, not the rule. Now, when we take a look at what we humans have made of this, the typical boarding stable or livery yard, we have situations that would never occur in nature. First, completely strange horses are thrown together into one group. Different breeds, different age groups, mares and geldings mixed, and they're all supposed to suddenly form a harmonious herd. It's like putting complete strangers from different cultures into a shared apartment and expecting everyone to immediately love each other. Anyone who's ever lived in a shared apartment knows it's not quite that simple. And then there's more. The group often constantly changes. The bigger the stable or the group, the more frequently new horses come and go. Imagine if you live in a shared apartment and your roommates change every few weeks. How relaxed would you feel? And horses in winter, it even gets tighter. Little space, little turnout. Everyone's on top of each other. And that's pure stress, even for the most social horses. But the real crux in many stables is the man-made scarcity of resources. And this is the point where peaceful horses suddenly become seemingly dominant or low-ranking animals. Those are the situations where we start seeing this hierarchy in the horses. That's a real core of the problems with these hierarchies. That seems so obvious to us. In many stables, there are just too few feeding spots for the number of horses, or only one water source for 10 horses, or too few dry, comfortable sleeping spots. And what happens then? Of course, competition arises. And the stronger, the braver, or simply hungrier horses prevail. And the shy, the cautious, the old or the sick animals, they go without. And boom, we have a hierarchy. But it's not natural. It's human made. It's a bit like putting 10 people in a room with only 5 chairs and then wondering why conflicts arise and they bicker about the chairs. The solution here isn't that the weaker people have to learn to do without a chair. The solution is more chairs. And for horses, this means enough feeding spots for everyone, multiple water sources, sufficient possibilities to retreat, more than enough sleeping places for all. And suddenly all the hierarchy problems disappear like magic. There are a lot of studies now out there showing exactly that. The more space the horses have, the less they have to fight over resources, the more harmonious the groups get, and all the aggression, all this battling, all this hierarchy disappears in the same group without even changing the group itself. With the same horses, the behavior completely changes if you provide ample resources. Another point that's usually overlooked: different horse breeds often have different body language. A Friesian communicates differently than an Arabian, a Gypsy Cob differently than a Warmblood. And it's not meant maliciously, they just sometimes don't understand each other. They speak different language or different dialects of a language, and this leads to misunderstandings. You just have to imagine being a somewhat stiff, upper-class British person moving to southern Italy, where they don't speak the language and they can only rely on reading behavior. And what our British person considers polite, restrained, is totally weird and somehow threatening to the southern Italian. And the lively nature of our southerner, on the other hand, overwhelms our northerner, and he in turn feels pressured and overwhelmed. And even with the best intentions, misunderstandings arise without anyone meaning anything bad. And this is the same in horses. Horses aren't racist. Again, that's a very human way of looking at horses. They just often don't understand the other horse's body language dialect. And then conflicts arise that we mistakenly interpret as ranking or hierarchy battles. It often takes many weeks or even months until horses have learned to correctly interpret the other horse's body language dialect. And what happens in the meantime, all these misunderstandings, that looks to us like fights for ranks, although it's just, I haven't got you wrong what they're doing. And speaking of misunderstandings, we humans are often way too impatient. A new horse comes into the herd, and after 2 weeks, we expect everything to run fine. But that's not how it works. Proper integration takes at least 3 months until the horse has even arrived in the new stable, and about 6 months until it really feels at home. And this is provided the group constellation fits. So much happens during this time. The horses get to know each other, figure out who fits with whom, develop friendships, learn each other's quirks, try to find the right jobs for every horse. So there's a lot of things going on in these 6 months. And what do? Often just when everything has settled in, we change the group again. One horse moves out, a new horse moves in. The whole sorting the group out starts all over again. In summer, some go to pasture, others don't. Boom, the whole painstakingly built social structure is mixed up again. How is a herd supposed to feel secure out in the pasture when exactly the horse that actually has the job of guard in the group isn't allowed on pasture because of laminitis? Quickly, there are discussions in the group again, who needs to take over the guard job, and we think they're renegotiating the hierarchy when they're often just unsettled because we changed something. And this brings me to a point that's also often underestimated. Even the absence of a single group member can throw the whole social fabric into chaos, not just adding a horse, but also taking out a horse. When the group's peacemaker moves away or the jokester suddenly isn't there anymore, everyone else has to find their roles anew. It's a bit like in a theater group, and when the lead actor suddenly leaves, everyone else has to adapt their roles. And that takes time and causes stress in the horses to distribute the jobs and the roles anew. And that's exactly what happens constantly in a lot of our stables. Different groups in winter than in summer. Some horses get to go to pasture in summer, others don't. Some get winter paddock time, others remain in the stable today for whatever reason. Horses are constantly moving in and out, some things always changing, and the horses constantly have to resort themselves and their social structure. And this is really, really hard and stressful time for them, and it looks to us a lot like they're always fighting about positions in the hierarchy when it's just they're trying to deal with what we're doing to them. And so now we come to the heart of the whole matter. This whole hierarchy thinking isn't actually natural at all. In the wild, horses choose their companions themselves. They decide who they want to live with and who takes on which tasks. This happens peacefully through sympathy and mutual trust in the horses, because they choose with whom they want to live together. But what do we humans do? We put completely strange horses together, make important resources scarce, like food or water, barely let the group settle down, and then wonder why hierarchies emerge and some horses disadvantage others or outright bully them. It's like putting 10 complete strangers in an apartment that's way too small with only one refrigerator and one bed, and then wondering why they fight. The problem isn't the people, the problem is the circumstances. So the big question, of course, is what can we do better? The good news is we can do a lot better. First of all, sufficient resources for everyone. Enough feeding spots, hay always available 24/7. Multiple water sources are very much appreciated. Enough space to get away and retreat, and more than enough sleeping spots for everyone. That's really an important point. There's so many studies showing that resources are key. Providing enough resources so they don't have to fight over them brings a lot of peace to the groups and a lot less hierarchy behavior. Second, keep groups as stable as possible. I know this is really hard, particularly when you're at a boarding facility or a delivery yard, because you don't have a lot of influence on that, but that goes out to the stable management. Don't constantly rearrange the groups just because it's more convenient at the moment for you. Give the horses the time they need to get to know each other and develop friendships. So try really to change groups as little as possible and keep them as stable as possible, because the group always is the safe haven for the horses. That's really important. And when putting groups together, pay attention to compatibility and the individual characters, not just your personal practical considerations, because different characters are needed in a group in order to function. When you already have one horse that likes to be the leader, who is a dominant and self-conscious character by nature, don't try and put another one like that into the same group. They will start fighting over who gets to be in the leading position. On the other hand, if you have a whole group of shy and unsecure and a bit anxious horses, they will be totally terrified all the time because nobody really wants to take over the lead position. At some point, someone will do it, but he will be under constant stress. So take the horse that's more on the dominant character side and introduce this horse into the group of the anxious horses, and this group will stabilize and the horses will be a lot better. So really look at the individual characters, whether they match, and just accept that some horses just don't fit together. That's normal and okay. So like you have some people you simply don't like, it's the same with horses. Just because it's another horse doesn't mean that they're best buddies. It's the same with humans. Just because the other one is human too, you may not be best buddies with that person. So respect that some horses just don't fit. And very important, accept the real integration takes time. 3 to 6 months is completely normal. Anyone expecting faster results puts everyone involved under unnecessary stress, and you really should give the horses the time to integrate and find their new social structure. So to answer our opening question, how important is hierarchy in the horse group really? From my perspective, it's much less important than we often think. What we consider natural hierarchy is usually the result of human-made problems. Too little space, too few resources, not enough hay, not enough access to water, too little time, too much change in the groups. This is human-made problems and not real hierarchy. Horses are naturally social, peaceful animals who prefer to cooperate rather than compete. When we create the right conditions for them, they show us that too. They show that they're not competitive. They don't bully other horses, but they're quite peaceful and nice with each other. And we find a lot of, less ranking battles and more peaceful coexistence in the group. And when you provide the resources and you take a bit care of how you put the groups together and try not to have too much change in it, you will see that all these perceived hierarchy disappears. So this is my really important take-home message. Watch the horses and try not to think of them as living in a strict hierarchy, but living in like family or a well-working group apartment. And if everybody knows his job and they always have enough food, they always have enough water, they have enough space to lie down and sleep, you will not find these ranking battles in the horses. So that's it for our podcast today. You can, as always, find more information about behavior on our website, zanoanimal.com, and of course on our social media accounts. Follow us so you don't miss any new information. Thanks for listening. Take care, and until next time.